What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Circles and Squares News Report for Monday, May 16th, 2022. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this part of the Circles and Squares podcast. I don't know if I should say network. Are we a network, Kate? Like, what is this? Channel? It's a brand. It's a
channel,
thing.
It's a brand. It's like, you know, it's an ethereal environment.
Let's go with that. This is part of the Circles and Squares ethereal environment. And we are so glad you're joining us for the show today to talk about some of the latest news for PlayStation and the rest of the game industry. So we're going to do just that in probably about half an hour or so. Before we get into that, I want to remind everyone we made our grand return to podcasting last week, and we had a big episode that kind of turned into a giant Detroit Become Human review that was kind of expected, but also, like, we went really hard into that game's story and some of the themes behind it. And so I really encourage you to go check that one out, especially if you've already played Detroit, because we do go into a little bit of spoiler territory, I'd say. But it was a good episode. Thanks for the support on that one. And as per usual on our news show, we're going to start off by talking about the PlayStation news from the last couple of weeks, followed by just general games industry news, and then we'll close it out with a kind of lighter side story at the end. So look forward to that to close the show out. To start off the show today, Kate, we have a bit of a disappointing article or some sad news to get out of the way, I guess. And this is something that's been, a big talking point, I guess, over the last couple of days within gaming, and it relates all to the abortion rights going on in the States, and just, you know, it's a giant human rights thing, and obviously there's a lot more to be said on it than we're going to say on this show, other than from the lens of what's happened with PlayStation. Jim Ryan had sent a email out about basically asking companies to respect all viewpoints and opinions, even though this is clearly a giant human rights violation and a health concern for, like, half the population of America. And, you know, I think by making a non-stance, he really was kind of making a stance that he didn't want to support these kind of progressive human rights from going away, especially. And it was weird too, like, Bungie came out in support of, like, you know, women's right to choose, and that's a studio owned by PlayStation. So to see Jim Ryan come out and kind of have a non-statement, and then sort of just trivialize the statement that he made by going on and talking about his cat's birthdays in the same email. Many PlayStation staff, I guess, were angry and upset. I'm just reading through the Kotaku article here from a couple days ago. And so just wanted to call attention to that. And I mean, this is just the kind of thing where it's like, man, you know, I hope you'd be a little bit more, you know, human focused than this, Jim Ryan. But if you're not, like, at least why would you even go out of your way to say this in the first place? Like, you're just stepping on rakes in your front yard.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the headline of this article it is funny. Like, it should be funny. It's like, oh, we're going to dodge, like, an extremely big social issue and talk about my cats. So, like, that it almost reads like an Onion article to me,
right? Yeah,
because, like, it's just so weird and like, it's the juxtaposition is just kind of bizarre, and, like, it's really, like, difficult to handle, because, like, on one side I'm sure he's got, like, a huge HR department, mm-hmm. that's like, you know, you can't make really, like, extreme political statements just in general. And so, like, I could understand from that side of it not really wanting to have that be, like, a work-specific topic or issue. And so, like, nothing about what he said is bad in the sense of, like, I think everybody's opinions generally should be, like, accepted and it shouldn't matter with your work performance. But at the same time, this is, like, really not a gray area issue. I think it's clearly black and white of, like, don't take away people's rights. That's fucked up. And, like, yeah, you know, you work at a video game company, it's not, like, you know, necessarily, like, in your area, and, like, you're not necessarily someone who's, like, you know, just because you are kind of famous doesn't mean you have to have an opinion and be, like, an activist on everything. But at the same time, like, no, fuck this. Like, everybody just pick the smart choice. And, like, I just don't understand, like, we are all this stuff going on. I've just thought to myself, like, we're very lucky to live in Canada, because it's almost, like, surreal to hear what kind of stuff was going on down in the States.
I know, it's crazy. I just can't, like, what other country in the world is like you know, considering taking away these some of these progressive rights, you know, like it's just so
backwards.
The crazy
thing about it too is like America is supposed to be this like progressive, you know, like first world leading country, right? Like a lot of countries follow suit. They're often the first to do things and these like massive world leader, and you think of them, or at least they have this like, I mean, obviously we make fun of them in the media a lot, like they're kind of the butt of a lot of jokes, maybe rightly deserved, but like you think of them as like a, you know, first world country, but this is very not first world country kind of stuff that's happening. And yeah,
right, yeah,
it's insane.
Yeah, I don't know.
And
I mean,
it's just a shame because someone like, you know, Jim and like other people in the industry, like, yeah, it's video games, it's not related to politics, but like you do have a platform and people are listening to you. And if you stand up and you hopefully support people's rights, like, you know, people hear that and it does matter to some people. So,
well, that's the thing, right? I think you just hit the nail on the head. It's like when you have a platform like that, I think that people will listen and take your, you know, opinion to heart. Like it's the reason that, I don't know, like you would, like, I flip it over to Xbox. Like I wouldn't, you know, Phil Spencer, I wouldn't imagine him coming out and standing like in a gray area in terms of like these type of rights and people's freedoms, you know, like it just, it seems like such a contrast how he would deal with it. I mean, that's totally an assumption, but just judging based on kind of, you know, past history and stuff. But anyway, this letter is what it is. We hope that things go better in terms of other studios that come out and talk. Like I said, Bungie had a really good statement. They linked to a bunch of places you can donate. And kind of work towards a solution and hopefully allow people to continue having a right to choose. And that would be that one, I guess. But yeah, Jim, smarten up, dude. Come on.
Yeah, Jim, smarten up. But also happy birthday to
smarten
your cats.
Up. Like, happy birthday to your cats. Nice. In all seriousness, I do hope your cats had a good birthday. But maybe next time, just wait a couple days and send a separate email. Don't trivialize human rights issues along with your cat's birthdays. Okay, bud? Like, that's a bad look. It's a really bad look. All right, let's talk about some more video game centric stuff, Kate. Let's move along. Our next story we have here is actually the top downloaded games from April 2022 on the PlayStation Store. Anyone who's listened to us for any length of time knows that sometimes we like to go over these sales lists. Just have a little look-see because it can be fun to see some surprising games at the top. And so I'm just going to go through. They've got the top 20 games listed. We'll go US and Canada. There's the European sales as well. So, but for US and Canada, number one on PS5 this month, or I guess last month, April, was Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, followed by number two, MLB The Show 22, number three, Elden Ring, then it goes WWE 2K22, Tiny Tina's Wonderland, NBA 2K22, Cyberpunk 2077, Gran Turismo 7, Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales, and number 10 is Madden NFL 22. I don't know if I'm going to read the last 10, I guess, but man, are you surprised? Lego Star Wars taking out everything. Like, wow, I mean, Star Wars popular, but I wouldn't have expected that to be number one.
Honestly, the more I think about it, the less surprised I am. Like, the Lego games are beloved in general, and Star Wars is obviously, like, one of the biggest franchises. And so, like, this is, like, it's a cool collection. I think people were really looking forward to this, like, three-game collection. So like I'm kind of not surprised, like it just came out, it's super exciting. The ones that always get me are the sports games, like MLB. Like they're always like the top five is two different sports games, and I know they do well, but like I just personally don't really know people who play them or care about them at all, and so they always surprise me because it's like the only time I hear about sports games is looking at these lists, and like there's at least two in the top five,
if not more. It's interesting. I guess it just goes to show, like, you know, despite how connected we are to like following video games, there's such a huge, I guess, like, I don't know if you call them a casual audience, but there's so many people that will just buy a console and play like a battle royale of choice and their sports franchise of choice. And like, that's what they play, you know? And I think that's just such a huge segment of people that would never come on a Reddit and talk about a game or like watch this podcast or anything, but they're out there like everywhere. They must be. The interesting part about MLB The Show 22 to me is being the second highest selling on PS5 is that game is free on Game Pass.
Oh, really?
Isn't it? I thought it was free on Game Pass for a while, maybe not free, but it's on Xbox as well now, which is kind of interesting. The other interesting part too, just going down to the PS4 sales, is on PS4, MLB The Show actually is number one and it beat Lego Star Wars. So I don't know what that says about Lego Star Wars being more popular on PS5, but kind of strange. Is there anything here that completely surprises you out of nowhere? Because I always like to look for.
Not a surprise. We got a shout out Elden Ring. Like, it's obviously still killing it in third place. What kind of surprised me was for Horizon Forbidden West is on here, but it's down in 12th place.
Yeah.
And that kind of surprised me because, like, yeah, it's not necessarily like new anymore. Like, usually with these games, with these lists that are like month specific, you expect to see like the big games that came out that month doing the best. And like, sure, Lego Star Wars like might not have more sales than Elden Ring in general, but it will in the month that it came out because you know, exactly. The big Elden Ring's already big Elden Ring fans already own Elden Ring, but like now we're buying Lego Star Wars. But like Horizon Forbidden West was a massive game that came out, and it's below like a lot of RPGs that have also been out for a while. Like Miles Morales has been around for longer, and it's still selling more than Forbidden West, so that was kind of surprising.
Yeah, I agree. And the one that surprises me the most, and along the same vein that I was going to say, was Kena being at 19, because that's another game that, I mean, it's a great game. I really enjoy it, and I think that, you know, it got good reviews and everything, but it's been out for a while, and to see it still kind of hovering in that top 20 is kind of surprising as well. And I mean, the other surprising part to me is that Grand Theft Auto is down at 18. Like, that game is such a juggernaut, you'd expect it to be in the top five, like, on every list. Which it is top five on the PS4, so, again, difference between the consoles there.
Right. I wonder if some of these lists, because, let's see. Yeah, I wonder how much this changed. And you know what's funny, too, is I look at these month lists, and I was like, I wonder what was on sale. Like, was Miles Morales just, like, a really good sale for the month?
Yeah,
many people were like, oh, great, like, it finally went on sale, I'll pick it up.
Well, I know Tiny Tina's is on sale right now, I think, so, and that's at number five. So that's probably got something to do with it. And Cyberpunk as well, I think, was on sale, and that's at seven, so.
Right, yeah. So sales, maybe that plays into it, but it's just kind of fun looking at these, right? Best part, too, is, like, you look at these, and you're like, oh, shit, I gotta play that. Like, ooh, yeah, I should play that.
I know. And then you're like, oh, you know, where is it? Call of Duty, maybe I'll skip that one, but Jedi Fallen Order below there. It's a good one.
Someone sent me a link today about the new Call of Duty and Elden Ring. And what was it? It's like an IGN posted on Twitter, I think. And it said, FromSoft latest has been the best-selling title in the last 12 months, even though it's only been out for 3. And it was like comparing Call of Duty and Elden Ring.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think I saw that too. Like, there was an article saying, you know, Elden Ring officially is mainstream. Like, there's no doubt about it now based on the sales numbers. And it's interesting, like, Call of Duty is having, I think, its worst numbers in a decade and sort of that shift. Yeah.
You guys can stop doing your gatekeeping now. Everybody gets to play Elden Ring and it's awesome. And they need to get the Dark Souls servers back up so new people can go play
too. Yeah. Well, okay. Let's go to the next part of our show today, which is that. So part of the new PlayStation Plus rollout that PlayStation is starting in the next couple of months is that certain games are going to be requiring demos to be included as part of the service. So as part of, I think, the highest tier subscription, games are going to have mandatory demos that you can try out, and I guess before you them or go full in on the game. And according to the report here that I'm reading from Eurogamer, it'll be required for any game that costs $34 or higher. So I guess they're kind of gating it off to higher budget titles. But it's interesting because we're kind of talking about this before, and on one hand, it's a really awesome thing for consumers to have these demos coming out, obviously, because who doesn't like to try something out? If you can try before you buy, or you're like, oh, maybe I'd only play this for an hour, like, let me get my fill. Or for even like us, like, I'm thinking, if you were to buy a game that you want to talk about on the podcast, I don't really want to buy it, but I can go check out an hour or two of it on this demo and then have something to talk about with you. That's a great opportunity for us. But then on the flip side, it's interesting sort of demanding that of the developers, because that's going to add a certain amount of work to their plate, depending on what that demo looks like for them, what type of game they're making. You know, is it multiplayer? Is it narrative? How do you incorporate that into a short demo? And so that could maybe even make the development process more stressful for the developers. So it's a bit of a push and pull, but it's an interesting way they've set this up.
Well,
there's
also the problem too, is like, I wonder what games might not become part of this collection of like the library for PlayStation's Game Pass because they didn't want to bother with the demo. So I don't know. I'm kind of mulling it over my mind. Like the compromise is just like make it so you can play an hour for free and then the developer doesn't have to like do anything extra. It's just you as a player, you have an hour. Like when you start, the game clock starts ticking. If you turn it off, clock pauses, you have an hour, and then your time with it goes away. Is yeah. maybe like the compromise, but at the same time, and I think that works for most games, because typically when you're playing a demo, like you don't really want to, you just want to kind of like get your feet wet, you want to see how it feels, and you want to kind of get a judge of the atmosphere, and typically like an hour might do that. But at the same time, like that doesn't really work great with every game. And it's like, well, if it's a really narrative-driven game, does it just you just skip cutscenes, or do you watch like cutscenes for 20 minutes and have 40 minutes to play? Like, it's just kind of, it's awkward for certain types of games that don't really like lend itself well to that first hour being the biggest judge of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of clunky. Like,
it is clunky. And just reading through this article too, it's clunky in the way that Sony seems to be rolling it out on the developers too. Like. They're mm-hmm. saying here the rule is not retroactive. It only applies to games that are not yet released. That makes sense. But also mm-hmm. the developers will have a 3-month grace period after the game launches to get the demo available. So it's almost like they're admitting they know this is going to be a lot of work on the devs. So it's like, well,
yeah,
you know, on one hand, why would you not want the demo out at the start? But it's like they're admitting it's going to be a lot of work. And then further on down the article, it also says that Sony has told the developers that it should be available for at least 12 months. And an alternate custom demo can be provided, not needing to be 2 hours long, but it would need to be approved on a case-by-case basis. So they're, before these demos even exist, they're kind of already being like, oh, there's ways to kind of go around this and make it more individual to your game. Mm-hmm. And so it's weird that they're putting out sort of these rules and then really saying, you know, it could also just be whatever kind of form you want it to be. Yeah, it seems like it's very clunky. I think that's a good word, like you said.
It's just awkward. The other thing, too, I'm thinking is, like, what is the demo for? Like, if you're buying Game Pass, like, are these games not on the Game Pass?
No, they're not. They're not.
So you're getting a demo, but then, yeah. And so then you go on and buy the game.
That's
but then
right.
It's like, well, what's the point? Like, if I'm a developer, like, why don't I just make a demo and put it on the store myself instead of, like...
Yeah. Well, that's what I think that's what they're saying is like, it's like no matter if you want to make a demo or not, maybe some developers were going to do this anyway. It won't change anything for them. But then other ones are going to be forced into creating this.
I don't know. The more I think about like this demo thing as part of like the tier, I just don't like it. Like, just give us games. That's why we're buying a subscription service, right? With a library. That's the whole point is if it's in the library, I can play it for an hour. That's my own demo and then never play it again. But, like, if I'm going to be buying the game anyway, then I'm just buying a game. I don't need the subscription service to give me a demo to, like, consider buying a game outside of the subscription I'm paying for. And it's just weird, and I don't like it. And I think it's, like, I just don't think it's worth paying that extra little bit a month for some demos.
Yeah, I mean, I think you get, it's the last tier is, like, you get the retro games and the demos, right? So it's really kind of that cherry on top for the really, really hardcore people. I mean... I personally, like I said before, when we talked about these different tiers, I think the demos, as a consumer, it's awesome because, I mean, I want to try as many things as I can. The part that doesn't make any sense to me is I think the demos should be on the cheapest part of PlayStation Plus because you're just going to have more people trying your games, more people wanting to buy them.
Right.
I think if you're subscribing to the highest tier of PS Plus and you want to try, like, the God of War Ragnarok demo, like, you know damn well that person's already going to buy God of War Ragnarok. They're subscribing to PS Plus Premium. Give the demo to people on the cheapest deal, the people that just want to go on there and play like one game, those people that are playing Madden and Fortnite and that's it. Like maybe they could try the God of War demo and then want to buy it.
That makes a lot more sense. And to be honest, like even the more you say that and the more I think about it too, it's like, why are we like paying for demos? Like the whole point of a demo is it's a commercial, like it's an advertisement to then buy a game. So like we're paying to get access to the advertisement so that we're enticed to buy your game? Like, no, it's an ad. Like, what am I going to do? Be like, yeah, I'll pay 30 cents to get that YouTube ad, please, just in case I want to buy, like, Vessi sneakers. Like, no. No, I'm going to buy the sneakers or I'm not. Like, it's so weird. It's so strange. I just don't get it. And, like, I think developers are going to be annoyed by this. And that sucks because... Like, I don't know. The game, yeah, we didn't have an extra 3 weeks to develop the game better because we're making this shitty demo.
I know. It's good. I'm looking forward to seeing if, you know, are there any kind of interviews that come out with developers, or how do they feel about this? Because I haven't seen too much, but I mean, we're also a little bit of ways away from it happening too. So it'll be an ongoing topic, I think. But for now, our next topic is a new PS5 model in development, ? First of all, of course there's a new PS5 model in development. They're always working on the next thing.
Yeah.
But I guess the interesting part of what we're talking about here is that Sony, apparently in Japan, has registered a revised PS5 model. This is coming from PlayStation Lifestyle, although it's been discussed in a few different places. And apparently a lot of this... if you're a technical person, I am not. I don't know anything about these chipsets and all this stuff. So you can go read this for yourself if you're interested. But apparently a lot of people over at Digital Foundry and whatnot have seen this new model. And apparently it's not really a performance, noticeable performance difference within the system. It's more of like using alternate cooling things, or I think... potentially using a different chipset that might be easier to get to make the consoles, just because there's still the shortage going on. So I think it's more of like a sidestep rather than a brand new console. Although a second part of this, just over on Pocket Lint, there is reports that AMD is working with a new chipset as well. And they're kind of talking about a PS5 Pro and you know, working on the timeline of the PS4, how it's kind of that 2-year mark where we start to hear about the pro versions of the consoles. But again, it's kind of just all speculation. And to me, it seems like, just because the lack of consoles out there and the difficulty they're having creating them, it's like, it makes sense they're trying to find an alternate way to create more, whether it's a pro or not.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, like, I mean, a regular consumer wouldn't know the difference, right? As long as it runs the same, like, I don't care what chip is in there. Like, I'm not opening it up. I'm not looking inside of it. If it runs the same, that's great. Like, I mean, as long as they've tested that. It would suck to say, like, if you bought one, I'm assuming they're going to cost the same price, and, like, you might not even know which version you're getting. So it would definitely suck if, like, one is significantly worse than the other. But if this is just a sidestep or if it's just an upgrade, I think that's awesome, because, you know, like, I bought my PlayStation 5 when they dropped because I wanted one early. Like, I understand that that means that I have, like, the base version of the system, and if they come out with new, better stuff, that's just better for people who waited, so...
Yeah, we knew what we were getting into when we bought them right away, but that's the nature of the beast, right? I think this is interesting because I don't know if you remember, but a couple of years ago, there was sort of that Switch revision came out, and it was the same as the base model Switch, but I think it had a different battery or something, or like a different, a slightly different chip that used less power. So there was actually two technically different Switches out there, one with a slightly better battery life, but they were both just modeled the Switch. It wasn't like an official redesign,
right?
But you'd have to go to the store and like look at the serial number on the box, and if it was a certain serial number, you could tell if it was like newer or older. So I wonder, you know, is there a universe where it's like, this isn't a PS5 Pro, but, you know, this new heatsink that we found actually is a little bit more efficient and loads like slightly faster or something. I wonder if that could ever be possible.
I mean, hey, if they're making little upgrades and they're not charging extra for it, then that's just a good thing. Like, I'm sure there'll be those salty people that like, oh, but mine was worse and I paid the same amount of money. It's like, oh, fuck it. Like,
you could have waited, dude. Could have waited.
Just better.
Yeah, it's fine. You'll upgrade eventually anyway. Just let people have their better version. It doesn't make change for you. Yeah, interesting though. Do you think you would buy the PS5 Pro when it comes out, or how are you feeling about that?
I really don't think so. I mean, I think my PS5 runs amazingly. I've had like zero issues on any game I've played. They've all ran amazing. They're all like beautiful. And I think for me too, like, I play on PC as my default system. So like, my PlayStation gets used more for like exclusives than it does for anything else. And so like, it's just, the PS5 is already such a good value. Like, yeah, maybe something runs a little bit better, and like, I did have the Pro for the 4, which I did notice a big difference in. So like, maybe when it gets closer to the end of its life cycle, it's more valuable. But I find the 5 is just so powerful, and it like runs like a little PC anyway, that I don't think the upgrade would be that incremental. So
yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think the only thing that would change it for me is I'm really interested in getting PSVR 2.
Right.
I think that's going to be awesome, and I'm kind of really banking on that being my next kind of big thing. But I don't know, like, if there's any universe where it runs better with the pro, that I might consider like going all in on that. But that's kind of the one thing I'm thinking, actually making the upgrade, because it's just so expensive otherwise, like buying another $500 console. And I know you can sell your old one, but it's a lot of money, right? And
it is hard to justify when you already have one, right? Like the dream of the pro is that you wait and you pick, you're like a later adopter and you just buy the pro instead of, you know, picking up the console, because it does feel like a waste. But yeah,
it does.
At the same, and it's hard to go back though. Like it's also one of those things too. It's like, if I don't have it, I don't know what I'm missing out on. But like now that I have a pro, if I go and like play the regular PS4 after the pro, it's like, oh.
Yeah, I know. I never got the pro PS4, but I think like usually my thing is I skip like one iteration. So I won't get the pro, but then I'll get a slim or like whatever comes out next.
Right.
And so it's just, we'll see. That's all the PlayStation news we have for this week. So let's move into the out of town area of the show, where we have a presentation to go over, one of our very favorite things. So we had Nintendo Indie World a couple days ago, and they showed off about 20 games, I think, right?
20 games
over the time. So I mean, we're not going to go over everything shown. It wasn't maybe the most impressive Indie World we've seen in the last few months, you know, but we'll go over the stuff that really stuck out to us. So I'll give you the floor first, Kate. What was the thing that you noticed?
Okay. So I mean we can't get away without talking about another Crab's Treasure. Like I was gonna say that's the end, but we gotta talk about that. That was a big finale of the presentation. And I watched it in like, I don't think I blinked the entire time I watched that trailer. So like I have a feeling it's not going to be good, but like there's a universe in which it is good, and I think I am obligated to play it. So if anyone hasn't seen it, you should look up, because it's a really fun trailer, but it's basically like a cute cartoon game where you're a crab, but it's a Souls-like. They hit you with like the most intense music, and he's going into boss battles, and you've got this cute mechanic where like you're a little crab, so you put like different types of trash and like various objects on your back to make your little crab shell. Which is super cute.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. I think the also like the little interstitials they did with the developers was, they were actually really funny. Like those guys really pulled off the comedy in a way that sometimes a lot of those jokes are like, oh my god, that was a little awkward, you know, kind of laughing at them.
The developer Aggro Crab, I believe the other game that they've made is Going Under. Which I haven't played, but I've heard really good things about it. It's like a satire. It's like a roguelike where you're kind of going through this like a tech startup kind of company, and that's the levels that you go through. And so it's just really much a play on like that kind of culture and kind of like a satirical breakdown of what it's like to work in that kind of like, you know, environment. It's like, oh, you know, that's the young like intern. He hasn't gotten paid for the last 3 years, and like just like that kind of stuff. And so I never played it, but I've heard really good things about it. So it's obviously a different type of game. I feel like the humor and like the design of the game is probably going to be fantastic, because this is another like satirical kind of take. It's just, instead of the roguelike genre, now we're on to like the Souls-like genre.
Right.
So I think this game is going to be delightful and like probably a blast for a couple hours. It just depends on how well it actually functions and feels in terms of a soul, like to see if I like finish the game. But I definitely like, I saw this game and I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to buy it. And I showed it to a couple people, and like the first thing everybody I showed it to said is like, so you're getting it, right? Like you have to play this game.
Yeah, you do. That's like my first thought too. Like
I will play this.
Absolutely. My prevailing thought from watching this entire Indie World was, well, I remember you said to me, it's like, oh, it wasn't the best Indie World for me. But I saw that game and I was like, that is, out of all the games here, the most likely either of us are to play is going to be you, Crab Game. So
yeah, I've got to. I feel like it's an obligation. But I'm like excited about it as an obligation, not like looking at it with trepidation. So
I'm glad to hear that. I want to shout out Elekhead, because I thought that game looked very cool. This is a one-person team, which I know is always just amazing. I mean, there's a lot of examples out there of games made by small teams, but every time you hear it, you're just kind of like, wow, you know, good for you, dude, like making a game by yourself. But this game looks genuinely really cool. It sort of has like an NES kind of look to it, but it's a puzzle game where you're essentially sort of a Mega Man type character, but instead of combat, you're your character is electrified, and it looks like when you touch certain aspects or jump on certain platforms, you power up sort of the things around you, and you're kind of puzzling your way through these levels and, you know, energizing different platforms so they move and you can get across gaps, and you can also throw your head so you can energize stuff further away from you and sort of make your way through these puzzle levels. It just looks really interesting, and I don't think I've ever seen a game tackle puzzles kind of the way this one looks like it's doing. And so I really liked it. The art style was cool. I'd like to play a Leckhead, Kate.
Good. I'm glad you said that, because when I was watching it, that game came up. I was like, oh, that's a game James is going to want to play. So I did what you did with the crab for this game.
Right.
But it does look cool. That to me is like the embodiment of indie games, is a game like a Leckhead, because it's just so like simple and creative, but also it's got that kind of like that beauty to it that only really seems to show up in indie games. So
yeah.
One's awesome. The other game that stuck out to me is Soundfall. So this game is already out on Steam. I did look into it. And it looks kind of neat. Like it's like a looter shooter, kind of like top-down RPG, and it's got co-op, which is neat. But the gimmick, I guess, or like the hook of the game is that it is all like music timing, so you have to shoot on beat. And what they said in the trailer, which was neat to me, is apparently the levels are generated based on what song you pick to play to, which I think sounds really interesting. Like you're not just, it's not just like you're playing a level and there's a song and you go along to it. Like the levels actually generate based off of the music. So I don't know what it's going to be. Right. I don't know how intricate that will be, if it's just like genre or like, you know, like how fast paced is, what kind of instruments. So I don't know how much depth there is to the game, but the fact that it's looks like it's got like couch co-op and it's a fun, like rhythm based kind of game like that, it just looks like a blast for a couple evenings.
Yeah, I agree. I think that whole music thing is really cool. I would love a game like this, but you get to use your own music instead of just the music the game gives you, and it could somehow generate based on, I don't know, the tempo or like whatever.
Yeah.
But that would be the ultimate.
That is really cool. I mean, I'm kind of interested, like on Steam, if like people can, I don't know if this is a game that's big enough or would be easy enough for people to like mod that in, but that's really cool. Like I know for Beat Saber, my friend has an Oculus, and we totally legally, you know, got some modding software on there.
Yeah.
And so for Beat Saber, people have uploaded a bunch of songs. And like, I don't think it's like automated. I think they actually had to like make the levels themselves go with the music.
Definitely.
But like, it is so fun. There's like there's everything on there that you could possibly think of. And just how creative people got with the way that like you have to hit them, like Gangnam Style makes you do like the Gangnam Style dance. The person that put it on there. And like the first time we played that, we were just like dying laughing, because like the way that you have to dodge stuff while beat sabering, like you just can't not do the dance if you want to be accurate.
Like, right.
So yeah, stuff like that is hella cool. And like, so yeah, this is on my list, like Metal Hellsinger, like the Doom version. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's been a few of these type of things.
Yeah, like I like that this is a new kind of like subgenre that's emerging, is like music timed games.
Mm-hmm. I want to shout out Gunbrella. I think this one looks like a ton of fun. This is from the same developer, I believe, from, they said Gato Roboto, right? And that was kind of small Metroidvania style game where you play as a cat in a mech, and I haven't played it, but I heard a lot of people say that it was a good time. And this game to me is just very stylish. I like the idea of the umbrella being like your weapon and also a way you move around the world. Like it's got a lot of speed to it, the way you kind of slide along those railings or like power lines and stuff. It kind of reminded me of actually a lot of the movement in what's the game on the boat where you're helping people go to the afterlife?
Oh, Spiritfarer?
Spiritfarer. It reminded me of kind of the movement of that. And Spiritfarer actually had some pretty fun movement in it, despite not really being an action game. But if this feels kind of like that, I think that would be a really good feel for this game. And also just like sort of the setting of it, it's like a noir kind of cowboy type of vibe. And I, you know, there's something really appealing about that setting to me. I really like it. And I know there's some mysteries and stuff you're sort of sleuthing around to solve as well. So I'd like to see more of this one. And I think this looks like it could actually be standout game next year for, you know, within the realm of like smaller indie stuff, not like game of the year. I mean, in terms of like mid-sized indie, I think this looks great.
Okay. Yeah. That one's kind of cool. It does actually look kind of neat. Yeah, I think aside from Gunbrella, it's just out to me. So there was one, it was kind of weird, Wildfrost popped out. Okay. Is that like deck builder? And I made a note of it because I was like, oh, cool. It's the same guys that did Grindstone, which is that game.
Oh, really?
That like puzzle game that we quite liked. But I don't, looking into it more, I am actually wrong, I think. It's not the same company. It just looks so incredibly similar with the art and like the way the levels are designed and like the hub town you go to. So I think I was shocked that they're not actually the same company. And so now I don't know how much I want to play Wildfrost because we liked Grindstone quite a bit. So
you know, the thing about that one is like I kind of agree with you that I'm getting kind of past the deck builder genre. Like I've gotten so into them, and I'm playing Inscription right now, and it has deck building elements. It's a card game, but it's a lot more than that. And I think that going back to just another sort of deck building game after Inscription and after playing so much kind of Monster Train and Slay the Spire, I just don't know if I'm really up for another game in that genre. But if it was from the Grindstone people, I think that might still be a play for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I played a bit of Monster Train recently, and, like, I think it's a great game, and I love it, but I just can't sink the time into it like I could something like Slay the Spire, because I think you're right, there is that little bit of fatigue, so I think I've kind of, like, put the brakes on that one.
You put your cards back in the pack.
Yeah, I slowed my train down, you know, I told the caboose to stop,
right.
And I'm going to save it for Inscription before I'm, like, really tired of that kind of a genre. But it's a shame because I love deck builders. Like, I'm such a sucker for them. And when I see them, I still have that pang of like, ooh
maybe. Yeah, me too.
Deck builder.
Me too.
And then it's like, I play it for now and I'm like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah, they're always alluring, but it needs to have something a little extra for me.
Absolutely. I think there's one other game I want to shout out, and it's a game I've already seen. I can't remember what presentation it's been at, but it's definitely been at some, is the game Silt.
Okay, yeah. I hadn't seen that one before. I thought it looked pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. It's kind of like it's almost like a journey style game, but I'd say it's maybe a little bit more, it's got some more puzzles and interactables than something like Journey, that's more of just kind of like the like visual experience. But it just looks really neat. Like, it's got this black and white gray like palette, and you're exploring underwater, and it's just some of the contrast between the way that they use that, like those negative colors, and some of the creatures that you seem to encounter look really beautiful. So it's one of those like, oh, come to Game Pass, please, because like I think I want to play you for 2 hours, and that's probably the entire length.
Yeah, right. Well, I got a few to shout out just rapid fire myself. I want to shout out Mini Motorways. I played Mini Metro near the start of the podcast, and you know, this is coming to Switch. I really want to play it on my phone, actually, as funny as that is to say. Like, it was just such a great experience with the touchscreen that I don't think I'd want to play this with a joystick. But Mini Metro was great. It's so fun to kind of connect those roads together and manage the traffic.
Those games to me are so funny because I see them pop up in videos a lot of like, you know, like here's 10 indie games you should play, or like, you know, people's YouTubes of like my favorite games of the year or whatever. And there's just something about it. Like, I just love watching it. I don't really want to play it, but it's so pleasing to look at that. Like, I don't typically watch a lot of people play video games because like I just prefer to play myself, and like I don't really get into the let's play kind of stuff, but like I want to watch, I would watch a let's play of Mini Motorways just because it's so pleasing and like, oh, everything
it's very aesthetically pleasing, and just well, you get into this kind of zen mode when you're playing these games, and you see the traffic patterns flowing, and you're kind of keeping track, like, oh, this roundabout is getting a lot of traffic, like I need to make a new kind of bridge over to there. And you know what, it's just a really zen experience, and if this comes to mobile, I'm in for sure. So that's Mini Motorways. I also want to shout out one other game, which is Card Shark, and that's one that I've been talking about for a long time. We've seen it for, I want to say, coming up on like, you know, couple years now, but it's supposed to come out this summer, I think on June 2nd. There's a demo out now. I'll probably check it out maybe for our next episode of the podcast next week. But this game is about like playing cards in ye olde England and learning how to cheat and learning tricks so you can get up to the king's table and like, you know, work your way up society by being a card shark, quite literally. And I just think that concept is so fascinating. It's published by Devolver, so I always have a kind of a higher expectation that they're going to put out something of pretty good quality. And Man, I'm just very excited for Card Shark. I also bought it in my Fantasy Critic League that I'm on, so I need some good reviews. Please, I'm not doing very well.
Hey, it's apparently on sale on Steam right now. So
oh well, maybe I'll buy it. Although I don't know if I want to play it. You know, I had one other game I wanted to just quickly get your opinion on before we move along, which is Wayward Strand. And this is the game that takes place in a flying hospital in the 1970s in rural Australia. And you're a teen journalist and you're kind of going through this flying hospital and you are talking to people and sort of just uncovering a mystery. And I don't think the setting really does it for me. Like, I don't know what about 1970s rural Australia and kind of these people that's going to pull me in. But the game itself, just I loved the way that it looked and moved. It almost reminded me of a modernized Paper Mario, like the way you'd move through a doorway and the wall would fall down. Right. And I think a game sort of skinned like this and of this concept, but with a different setting and narrative, would be very, very fascinating. So I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts on that, because I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of a little bit of a barrier to this one. Like, I really like the concept, but it didn't jump out to me for whatever reason. To me, it kind of, I think what it is like, it's one of those really like story driven kind of just interact and like very emotional looking game. And I think like I've got a couple of those on my list already, like Lake and Spiritfarer, that are just a little bit like higher up on the list.
Yeah.
And so this game looked good to me, but it didn't stand out as like something that I would be excited to play right now, just because I've already got like a bit of a backlog for that style of game. But I think like the setting of like the floating hospital actually sounds really neat. And I like the Australian influence, just because I haven't really played anything in that setting. So just the difference in the variety appeals to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I didn't fall in love with the journalist character, which is maybe a little bit of a barrier.
Yeah. I just think it's cool how you can go talk to people, or you can eavesdrop on them, or you can, you know, do different things. It seems pretty open. And so, like I said, if it was a different setting, maybe another take on this type of thing, it could be pretty cool. Anyway, that's the Nintendo Indie World, guys. We've spent a lot of time on that. So let's talk about our next topic. This is, of course, the new Resident Evil trailer. They've got a new Netflix, and it is a Netflix adaptation coming out. I think it's a TV show. I could be wrong. To be honest, I haven't looked too much into this. And I wanted to ask you about it, because I know you are the Resident Evil fan between the two of us. On my behalf, I just think monsters actually looked... I'm not a huge zombie person when it comes to horror movies, but I actually think that the zombies and the creatures looked actually really cool in this trailer, so that's kind of got me interested in watching it. But as a Resident Evil fan, Kate, I must ask you, what do you think about this?
Okay, well, I want to scale that back. I've played the two most recent ones. So, and I've enjoyed them. So I don't know if I would... I would say maybe I'm a fan. I definitely wouldn't say I'm an expert. I don't know a lot of, like, the lore and, like, when, you know, like, important characters made cameos in the last two games. Like, I don't know. I know that guy's a big deal, but I don't know why. So I can't say I'm going to come to it with much of the perspective of, like, you know, this... I love Resident Evil specifically. And I'm not even like really big into zombies, because I feel like that's a genre that is just so like plagued with too many adaptations these days. Yeah. So there's some fatigue there as well. But I like that we're getting a lot of new video game stuff. Like, some of it's been pretty decent in adaptions to TV and movies. And I feel like I will, like, there's not a chance in hell I'm not watching this. Like, you know, even if I don't seek it out myself, like, my friends that I played the Resident Evil games with will 100% want to watch it, and like I'm on board. So we'll see. I've heard it's got like mixed ratings so far.
Well, I know they did a movie last year. I think it was Welcome to Raccoon City, and I don't know if that one did super well. So I don't know if this is kind of like going to be following more in the vein of that, or if this is something completely separate.
Mm-hmm. It looks separate to me, as far as I know. I think it's like its own thing, and I think it's just like an eight episode thing as well. So it's not going to be like something they drag on. It seems like it's going to be a pretty contained little mini series, which I like the idea of, because that to me just screams a little bit more like we have a plan and there's quality versus like we're going to make a season and see if we can get enough money to make another one.
Yeah.
And like the trailer was pretty good. I will give it that. Like I liked the song choice they put in, which is always kind of hit or miss in trailers. And it genuinely looked like it would have some really good creepy stuff. So
yeah, it has a playful nature to it too. That yeah. song at the end is kind of like a way different tone than you'd expect. And there's, you know, yeah, it just seems like there's a lot more to it than just running from zombies. Like they're kind of showing you how the virus gets started. And yeah, maybe some cool stuff. I'm gonna watch it too. If you watch it, maybe I smell a bonus episode of a podcast here on that.
Deal,
we still gotta watch Uncharted, by the way.
Yeah, we gotta watch Uncharted. I've been putting that off just maybe intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Hey, there is a report as our next story that Sega is going to be releasing a lot of games in the coming year, and this includes a lot of remakes and remasters. This article here from Push Square is saying that over the next 12 months, Sega plans to release what sounds like a whole lot of games, and says it wants to, quote, significantly increase in new titles. And apparently including multiple remakes and remasters. And so, you know, Sega is obviously such a well-known company, has a lot of different games under their belt. They've been, you know, a big name for a long time. And I'm just wondering, with the talk of remakes and remasters, is there a certain game from Sega or games that you would want to see the most?
I mean, give us some Sonic Adventure remasters.
I am so glad you said that.
To be honest, I don't even know if realistically I want them, because I feel like they probably hold up well enough that, like, I don't know if a remaster is worth it. But at the same time, they probably don't play like I remember them, so maybe they do. But I also think I never played the original one. Like, we had Sonic Adventure 2.
Yeah.
And we played that game to death. But I would never have touched the original. So, like, a remaster pack of those two would be, like, a pretty easy sell, I think.
I agree. I think that would be amazing. My hopes are so low for that, but also,
right, yeah,
like, I feel like we'd have a better chance of getting Sonic Adventure 3 than we would a remaster of the originals. Like, I just think they're kind of past that, and it would be memeified because those games are known to be super buggy, and like, I just don't know if they're going to go down that route, but it would be cool, and I would buy it, like, zero doubt about it would I buy that. obviously, we got to mention Persona here, being a franchise that they are kind of associated with. I would love to see a remastered or a remade version of like Persona 1 or 2, even 3, because 3 is only really accessible like on the Vita, or, you know, I think you can get it on the PSN as well, but it's just, I would love to see a newer version, especially considering how smooth and slick 4 and 5 are. If they could kind of bring the older ones in that level of quality, I would buy that instantly.
Yeah, you know what I would like to, because I didn't ever end up ever beating 4, which is a shame. I should go back and do it. But I found that like there were just so many conveniences that 5 had that 4 was missing. Mm-hmm. And so what would be really nice, and maybe other people wouldn't want it because they, you know, they like the game as it is and don't want it changed. But I would love like a golden remaster that like gave it some of the 5's quality of life. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, being able to control like... And, like, I think 3 as well could do with it, too, like, controlling all of your party members instead of, like, just your main character, which I know is, like, a big complaint. And, like, just some of the ways that, like, I found with 4, there was a little bit more, like, grinding required versus 5. I'd never grinded at all. And, like, I went to Mementos and did side quests, but it didn't feel like grinding because I was doing things. Whereas, like, in 4, there was definitely, like, why I stopped playing and lost a little bit of steam was I got against a boss. And it was, like, I could play the boss fight for, like, 40 minutes because like he couldn't kill me. I had enough resources to stay alive, but I was doing like nothing in terms of damage. And like the obvious solution is like, you know, go grind a bit and come back. But that, you know, we know how I feel about grinding, and that just kills my
immersion.
I'm with
you too.
And so like 5 just had such good pacing and it was just so well balanced. Like even before Royal, I thought base 5 was just like a really smooth. I never felt like I was slowing down when I was playing that game. And so I'd love to be able to experience the other Personas with that kind of like atmosphere and that kind of pacing. But
yeah, amen. I'm so with you. You know, the other one I wanted to just shout out quick that I would love to see, and this is my kind of niche pick that comes out of nowhere. Do you remember Trauma Center?
Sounds kind of familiar.
It was a game I had on the DS, and it was like an anime surgery game, and people would come in, and you'd have to go on this touchscreen and like cut, you know, perform surgeries, but they were a little bit like, they weren't like realistic surgeries. They'd have infections that are sort of not real, and things would go kind of crazy, and it was actually a pretty challenging game, but I would love to see another take on Trauma Center. Just because it's like, when do you get to perform a surgery in a game, you know? The only examples probably are like stupid VR things where you're in
Yeah, or
clumsy
like
hands and all this
surgeon
stuff,
simulator
you
that's like
know?
meant to be
Exactly. Like
approach.
I want this anime kind of difficult but precise surgery game with these crazy different, you know, problems people can have. I think that'd be a ton of fun. Give it to me. Trauma Center.
That's honestly kind of cool. But that was a lot of like touch screen work, right? Like that was a
It
Wii thing
was.
and it had,
It
or that
was.
was a DS thing and it had a lot of like, I remember actually now that you mentioned, I remember you'd like have to like stitch up a wound and you'd have to do the pattern and like,
Exactly.
you know, like wipe with alcohol rub or something and you'd be on the screen. So that is actually kind of cool, yeah. It was like cooking, like those things are popular. Like Cooking Mama was a big thing. Like a lot of those like sim kind of like mini game, but like a little bit more specific kind of
Yeah,
stuff.
almost
And
like
that was
what
one of
if
them.
WarioWare's games were just expanded into one big game around one of the
Yeah.
mini games. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, like you're right, the touchscreen is so integral to that game. I don't know how good it would be. You know, are the Joy-Cons accurate enough to kind of do motion controls? I don't know. But at the same time, I mean, come on, it's 2022. We can innovate a new
We can
control
figure
scheme,
it
folks.
out.
We can
We'll
figure it out,
figure
okay? We can figure it out.
it out.
We have one last story for the day today, Kate, before we get to the fun one at the end. And this is that Gotham Knights will no longer be released on PS4 and Xbox One, despite the game was, you know, previously supposed to come out on last gen and this gen. But I mean, for both of us, Gotham Knights isn't a game I think we're really, really looking forward to. But I think it's interesting that a precedent has kind of been set that a game that was previously announced for both generations is now just being moved over to the current gen. And so I wonder, do you think this could be a trend? Like, is something that I mean, I guess it's not really going to affect us and for this game, but you know, it's interesting to see a game get shifted in its release. Like, you'd think they've put hundreds of hours of work between their different employees on making this version, and they're just scrapping it apparently. And it's kind of interesting to see, especially since the game's supposed to come out like later this year.
Yeah, it's kind of late in development to announce that, and like that sucks for people who are looking forward to it, and like you know they're just sitting on a PS4 or something. So I understand that sucks. I think it's just one of those things though that it's just kind of inevitability. It's gonna start happening, and there's some games that are I'm surprised aren't exclusive, especially like first party stuff. I feel like that's always like where it hits the most. Is like okay, next God of War, like God of War is coming to PS4 as well, I think, right? And so
Well,
like.
so did Horizon, so did
Into
most games, I
Horizon.
think. Like Miles Morales was even on PS4. I think there's only a couple that have been
I think
exclusive.
Returnal is
Returnal.
one of the big ones, and Demon's Souls, I believe, is also.
Sackboy.
Yeah, so there are a few, and it's just gonna kind of slowly roll in, but I don't know. There's pros and cons. Like it's hard to say. Like I'm in the bias area where like it being on PS4 means nothing to me because I've got the five and it's unnecessary, but at the same time, like they're still selling PS4s, and so it's kind of a
Well, there's so
bummer
many
if, like,
people who can't get a PS5, and you know, having it on
yeah.
PS4 would be great. So it's got to be a resources thing, right? Like they clearly the it does it seems like, okay, our choice is we can either delay the game or scrap the other version, and who knows what the reasoning is, but it seems to me like by scrapping the older version, they're saying like, look, we really need to hit this date of October
Yeah.
2022
Well,
or whatever it
yeah.
is.
Partially resourcing, and I think also too the reason they do it is so they can make a better like experience for whatever console it is. So that's why it's stuff like Returnal, it's like, oh, it runs like so fucking amazing. It's got so like crazy controller support because like they wouldn't have to develop and like make it run on anything else. We could make it like so much more next gen and whatever. But like when a game like Gotham Knights is coming out, like that does, I'm sure, like I'm not an expert, I'm sure that factors into it. But at the same time, like you're making it for PC and like PC is gonna have like, you know, like, do you want to run it on ultra high or do you want to run it on low settings? So like there's already gotta be those kind of like incremental, but I think console's probably like harder to develop for, it's more specific, so maybe that it is more work to do it that way.
I mean, I totally agree. I think there's a lot of merit to something like Returnal being developed just for the PS5. I think the only difference is Returnal was never announced for PS4, and then they said they're no longer doing it.
Yeah.
Like, if they had that vision from the start of wanting to make it the best it could be, I feel like they should never have said it was coming to the older consoles. I could feel being burned if I was someone who hasn't upgraded or hasn't had the ability to upgrade. And then, you know, big Batman fan. Obviously, it's a huge franchise. And I would feel kind of burned a little bit getting it taken away from me.
Yeah. It is a bummer, because that is definitely like how it's going to be perceived, is that, like, you know, it's like there's a very big difference psychologically when it's like something isn't available versus something is no longer available. Mm-hmm. And that's going to suck for a lot of people. So it's a shame they had to do it. I don't know. Like, it's just so much speculation, right? It's like, is it the developer's choice? Is it like, you know, who made this call? The publisher? Like,
yeah, a lot of things that we could factor in, I guess. But, you know, maybe we'll never know, Kate. Maybe we'll never know.
The game does look kind of cool, though, I will say. I watched the trailer. I don't, like, it's probably not my kind of style of thing. If I'm going to play a superhero game, I'm playing Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
But it generally does look kind of cool. I like Gun Robin. It was a character I wasn't familiar with. Is like, you know, they're all fucking Batman guys. They're like, we got poles, we got sticks. And then this one guy shows up, he's got two guns. What is he doing here?
You know, that game, I think it looks better than I initially thought. But I'm with you, too.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, that I'm glad to see, at least, is that it really seemed like it was going to be, you know, looter kind of play the same levels over and over again type of thing. And grind your characters, and it seems like they're saying it's not like that, like it's not sort of an MMO type of deal. And so I think that that's like a good thing for the game, but at the same time, we'll have to wait and see. It does have some of those type of elements, the multiplayer focus of it, how story driven can it be, you know, depending which characters, like what if the characters don't make sense in terms of the story, like it's one of those where the second player just doesn't show up in the cutscene, like that can be kind of weird. All those different questions.
Like, oh, we got to do this pacifist mission. Like, the second player sitting there with gun guy, and he's like, ooh.
Oh, dear. Oh, man. All right, let's get into our last news story, which is something I found. And this isn't so much a funny story as it is just like, holy fuck, this is impressive. So I wanted to highlight it. So over on GameSpot, I found an article about a guy, and his name is Bohadori or something. I think his maybe an online name or like a YouTuber. I should have probably looked into that. But anyway, this guy has beaten all 12 mainline Assassin's Creed games without taking any damage in the process, working all the way from Assassin's Creed up to Valhalla. And holy shit, he also played on the highest difficulty settings available, 100% synchronized, no reloads, no restarts, no glitches. Like, what the hell? You know, like, this is such a long series to do. They're saying that he took... practicing for each run was about 100 hours per game, and Valhalla, because it's such a big open world game, was 800 hours of practice time, let alone actually completing all these runs. And like, god forbid if he made a mistake and got hurt in one of these and had to restart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my god, that's just maybe the most insane feat I've ever heard in terms of like endurance and commitment.
Yeah, that is insane. Like, sure, Assassin's Creed aren't like necessarily the most difficult games, but like, you play any game for 100 hours and don't accidentally make a mistake. Like, doesn't matter what game it is, that's insane.
So
just fucking props, I guess, man. Like,
I know.
That's awesome.
I watched like part of this. Obviously, I mean, I'm just clicking through. Sort of, how the hell do you know when he's doing something difficult? Like, you're just going through hundreds of hours of video. But I mean, yeah. I just don't know how you'd do something like this. Like, how would you find the time to practice 800 hours of one game and then also do the other 11 games for 100 hours each? Like, man, that's a lot. The props to this guy. I hope he earned a lot of money on, like, Twitch donations, and the YouTube of this must just go crazy. Yeah. If you had to do this for a game series, Kate, what would you make it? What would you do? Would it be Dark Souls?
If I had to do Hitless, Deathless?
Would it be Dark Souls?
I mean, that's like a series I would like want to do because it's cool and I love them so much. But Hitless in all the souls, like not taking, like, yeah. I don't think I could do it. I honestly, like, I would spend 800 hours doing like one game to take it without damage. And like, I think it would just make me hate them because like, I couldn't, like, it just sounds so incredibly tedious to like practice to that level of perfection.
Yeah. So, and like, to understand the game so intricately that it almost like, it's not a game anymore at that point. You're just, you're kind of just running through the simulation of something that, like, you know.
I think I'd like have to cop out and pick something like quick and easy, but like that defeats the purpose. So I don't know. What would you do?
And two things came to my mind immediately. This is totally different, but I would love to say that I've played through every single song on the hardest difficulty in Guitar Hero and like hit every note. Like, that would be really awesome. Cool.
That'd be cool.
And the other one I thought of would be, because it made me think of back, like, we answered the question of like, what's our biggest gaming accomplishment? Like, I beat Contra without the Konami code.
Right.
I would love to say that I've been through every Contra game without getting hit, because that would be just bonkers hard. But that would be cool, right?
That would be awesome. I think if I had to do this, I'd cheat and just do like a single game. Like, I'd do something like Fury. Like, a couple hours, you can beat it. And like, it's got like the Furious difficulty mode that's like super hard. But it's like, you know, maybe if you really just practice like all like 8 bosses, however many there are, and then got flawless, like that would be a cool achievement. And maybe like a little bit more manageable, but...
Oh, geez. A little bit. Just a little. Wow. Well, if you would like to write in and let us know what game series you would play through on a perfect run on the hardest difficulty for 800 hours of practice, then please do so to circlesandsquarespod@gmail.com. And of course, if you would rather get in touch with us on Twitter, we're over there as well, @CNSPod. Of course, the links are down below wherever you're listening to this episode. Thank you again for taking the time to chat about this news with us today. And like we said at the top of the show, if you're interested in Detroit Become Human, go check out our most recent episode of the podcast last week. And we'll be back again, I guess, next Monday to talk about the games we've been playing, including Curse of the Dead Gods from PS Plus. We both played a bit of that, have some interesting opinions. So look forward to us next week. And again, thank you for the support, and we'll see you very soon.